All right, and that was Blackwater Park by Opeth. It's a juggernaut of a song, clocking it at around 12 minutes. So that's the last metal we'll subject
you all
to.
That's the last metal for tonight.
Last metal
as
for
far
tonight.
As we know.
As far as we're aware of for now.
Yeah.
Last metal for
but
tonight.
Maybe you'll be inspired by us.
Yeah, to listen to more metal and more crazy out there music in general.
Yeah, that's why you should be listening to WRCT.
WRCT 88.3
yeah.
FM.
And tune in on Sunday. I will be live from 1 to 3 p.m. My name is Liz.
That is DJ Liz Mayday.
Yeah, and you've been here with me and Sujay.
And Sujay, guest DJ.
Guest star of the show.
Guest star of the Carnegie Mellon scene. I had no idea. All right, final song.
The king of the Carnegie Mellon scene.
King is a bit much. Let's sign off with this.
Yeah, we have one more, and that'll be it for us. This is Free Yourself by the Chemical Brothers. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in. WRCT.
WRCT.
Free yourself. Free yourself. Free yourself. Free me. Dance. Free yourself. Free them. Dance. Free yourself. Help to free me. Free us. Free yourself. Help to free me. Free us. Free yourself. Free yourself. Free yourself. Dance. Free me. Free us. Free us. Free us.
You're listening to WRCT.
Just a wiggle and a wiggle, yes, baby, all night long. Oh, this wigglin's
blow your brain out. Zombo here, wiggling it out for you. Ah, my goodness. Coming up on 1 o'clock, this is Wiggles by Red Prysak. And we heard the Mystery Gang from Hungary. Fabulous fellows. doing Wiggle Baby. We heard Wiggle Wiggle Baby by the Cheerleaders. By request for Wheat Baby, that was Gene Forrest and the Four Feathers, Wiggle. And Jack Hammer started all that wiggling off with the Wiggle. Lovage. Lovage gave us the book of the month. Stoop Down Baby. Oh, yes, sorry. Who thinks you don't get an education on this show? I don't. Stoop Down Baby. Chuck Willis. The Creeps gave us the Whip. King Kong, Tarantula Ghoul, and the Grave Diggers. The Sensational Alex Harvey Band with King Kong. And Big T Tyler's King Kong. Ah, man, we got that concert calendar coming up at 1 o'clock, and I haven't played anything out of the WRCT garbage bin. So let's rectify that situation right now, huh? Let's stop all this fun. Oh, yeah. Boy, there's a joy killer right there. Brian Wilson. Man. Ooh. Man. This is like being punched in the stomach for like 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah, right. All right, let's get these PSAs rocking and rolling, and we'll get to the, I got some more Wiggle songs, too. So how about that? If you want to give me a call, you just wait. All right? Just wait. I'm busy. Oh, Jesus is killing me. This is like getting, like, some slow, painful disease. Brian Wilson's disease. There we go. It sounds like he's... I don't know, man. It sounds warped. There you go. Lucky old son.
There's a power in that division.
What is this? It just gets worse. This is like Twilight Zone radio, where the guy starts... He's R.D. Johnson, I think, was in that one. He's like a DJ. What is this? I don't even know what this is supposed to be. Hope he's not got any dirty words in it. Yeah, I don't know. I want to pot that sucker down. It says there's no dirty words on it. I want an instrumental. He talks too much. That's better. Had that spoken word intro that kind of was spooky. Oh, man, this is making me tired. It's like rawhide at 16 RPMs. All right. Children are naturally curious. They're born learning, so follow their lead. Yeah? Is that so? That's so? What does your child like about riding in the car? Huh? Did he like singing along to the radio music? I bet he was singing Stoop Down Baby. I bet he was singing that and you were just clapping your hands as baby was singing Stoop Down Baby, huh? He counts trucks? Does he watch the traffic light change colors? Sounds like my day. Talk to your child about what's going on around the car, all right? It becomes a learning moment. That's something. You know he's going to want to go to Chuck E. Cheese. This learning moment around the car is just a temporary fix till you got to buy him something. And when you talk to your child, you build vocabulary. How about this word? No. Yeah, how about that word? No. Try that one on your child. No. Eh? Eh? Learning starts long before school does. So for more tips, go to bornlearning.org. That's a public service announcement brought to you by the United Way, the Ad Council, and WRCT. This song's still going, huh? Well, that's the end of that one. There you go. Interesting. To be a good partner with your child's caregiver, tell her about the things that might be happening in their child's life that could affect his every day. This can include difficulty sleeping the night before. Oh, man, that's me. Excitement about a new pet. Man, that's me. Or a parent being away on the business trip. That is so me. Read all the notes and newsletters they send home. Drop in and visit when you can. The Cooperative Extension Better Kid Care Program at Penn State has educational materials and training for child care providers. The number to call it is 1-800-452-9108. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go rush right out and buy this one. It's like the lullaby version of Love Cats. It's only like 45 minutes long. You ready to do some more wiggling? You ready for more wiggling? I don't know about you, man, but this music makes me want to wiggle. Ooh, can you imagine someone like listening to this full thing, man? Hmm? Eh? Eh? Why you? All right, let's do the wiggle. What do you say? Yeah, you know you want it. You want it. Well, here you go. It's that simple. All right. Got a big heaping help on the Chuchifrios and Fungalore coming up at 1 o'clock with the concert calendar. Yeah, let's do the wiggle by Mabel Franklin. Oh, man, we're running out of time here for the wiggling stuff, but I gotta play this to bring it down a bit. Oh, yeah, Bobby Blue Bland. Get your moolah where you spend your time. Yeah, we're the Delmonas, Uncle Willie, and Wiggle Wobble by the Ramblers. All right, yeah. You can hear him clear his throat or blow his nose with his finger during the song.
You go where you wanna go, and you stay as long as you please. You give your best love to John Henry, then you bring the scraps home to me. Now that's the way you wanna do it. I've got to draw the line. So from now on, you just get your money where you spend your time. I work too hard for these pennies to be treated like a fool. And the two-time game you trying to run on me is something I just can't use. There's too many good women out there could use a love like mine. So from now on, you just get your money where you spend your time. Don't let you worry me no more. Now I'm not gonna try to catch you, and I hope you understand. I'm gonna find me another woman, and you can go on out there with your man. I'm tired of being mistreated by you. When I made up my mind, so from now on you just get your money where you spend your time. Why you spend your time, baby?
Your money, where you spend your time.
Now, I don't know about you right now, baby. I don't know why you're gonna spend your time.
Your money, where you spend your time.
It's one thing I know, baby. Bobby sure know where I'm gonna spend
your
mine.
Money, spend your time.
I'm tired.
WRCT is committed to bringing the best of new music, sports, and public affairs to the Pittsburgh area. However, we cannot do this without the support of the people and businesses of our community. If you or your business are interested in underwriting WRCT and receiving recognition for your funding, please contact our Public Relations Director at 621-0728.
Dog needs a new dog house. Terms of firm labor and lucratism. No substitution.
You can marry a taxi driver. I don't care. You can marry a lorry driver. I don't care.
taxi.
Coming up, un momento, the moment you've all been waiting for. The WRCD concert calendar coming up at 1 o'clock.
Hello, mate. Where do you want
to go? And we got all kinds of crazy stuff for you later. I'll figure it out. But you know it's time for... You know what it's time for. Yeah. Time for... some Chucha Frios with... a side of Fungalore.
Do you feel it?
Yes, I feel it.
You do?
I feel my beloved barrio, my ghetto.
Do you feel it?
This is a story of...
All right, he's going to get to it. Then I get to the concert.
No
counter.
Man's land.
It's yeah, whatever.
15th Street and 125th.
Yeah.
Everyone today is talking about el barrio or their ghettos.
Yeah.
About the hard times they had. We had hard times, but we had good times, too.
All right.
I can remember the summer.
Come on.
Summertime was beautiful.
All right.
The days were long. We didn't need any ocean breeze.
Nah.
We had the Hudson River.
Yeah.
The East River.
Yeah.
When we wanted to refresh ourselves, who needed the ocean? We had the pump. You remember that Johnny pump? All we needed was a good screwdriver.
Come on.
And
come
a
on.
Can. And we were refreshed.
Come
At
on.
Night, the breeze was beautiful.
Come on.
Tar Beach. That was our meeting place.
Come on.
And we had Fungalore.
There it is, Fungalore. Yeah, Fungalore.
Beautiful. Our food was
here
really
comes.
Together. Rice and beans. That's our soul food. With a little cuchi fritos on the side.
There we go. We did it. That's official. I can start the concert calendar. We had our Fungalore and our cuchi fritos. This is the concert calendar read every 1, 7.
Well, you're not going to get no concert calendar, especially a concert calendar that's 13 years old. That's right. You've been listening to Zombo's Deep Archives right here on WRCT in the Pittsburgh. This show originally aired March the 6th of 2009. So 13 years ago, going back into time. Join me and you in this and the Go in the Past and all that stuff Thursdays 2 to 5 o'clock. So it's a 3-hour show, Zombo's Deep Archives. And then my regular live show happens Fridays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So it's a double shot of Zombo. It's quite a neat little thing going back, getting all of these old shows, playing all these old shows, listening to them again with you. It's always so much fun. And there are all kinds of Zombo things for you. Zombo Co., ZOMBOCO.com, has downloads of like at least the past year and a half of Zombo shows that you guys can have for your own private collection and your own listening, rebroadcasts on WBCQ The Planet, and also specialty shows on RadioCrown.com. Once again, you have been listening to Zombo's Deep Archives, playing shows 13 years ago and presenting them right here for you. This show is from March the 6th of 2009, and regardless if I'm there, here, way back then, you know what I'm doing. I am remaining in your brainin'. WRCT in the Pittsburgh.
Let's Interesting about Zelensky, one day he wants negotiations and the next day he seeks more weapons. And NATO, which Zelensky has many times said, we don't need to be in NATO, understanding that this was always the kind of jujitsu strangeness. They couldn't even join NATO if they were invited to join NATO right now because of the territorial difficulties inside Ukraine.
That's Katrina Vandenhoevel, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Katrina Vandenhoevel on Russia, Ukraine, the war, and the United States. The Russian invasion of Ukraine, with its horrific atrocities and massive refugee crisis, has turned the world upside down. The war will have a huge impact on global food security, as both countries are major exporters of wheat, barley, and other grains. As usual, the media provide very little context and background. We're told ad nauseum that the Russian invasion was unprovoked. A careful look at history reveals a slightly more nuanced picture. To explain is not to excuse Moscow's criminal attack. Meanwhile, as two-time legendary Medal of Honor winner Marine General Smedley Butler reminds us, war is a racket. U.S. weapons corporations are lining up to feed at the trough. Before the war is over, many Ukrainians and Russians will die, while Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and Northrop Grumman will make money hand over fist. Our guest today is Katrina Vandenhoevel. She's the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. She writes a weekly column for The Washington Post and has edited or co-edited such books as The Change I Believe In and Voices of Glasnost. I talked with her on April 11th. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, David.
Well, clearly the war, the Russian invasion of the Ukraine dominates the media pundits and the politicos in Washington, Moscow, and throughout Europe. But before we get into the actual war itself, talk about the history of these two nations, Russia and the Ukraine, and how they've been intertwined, not just geographically, but culturally, their languages, Russian, you're a Russian speaker, and Ukrainian are very close. So someone told me it was like a Spanish and Portuguese in terms of being similar. So talk about that background of the between the two countries.
Thank you for beginning with history. I followed Russia over many years, 40 years plus, and the U.S.-Russian relationship. In terms of Ukraine, what I do know is that every Russian I have known over these last years has a relative of some kind in Ukraine. The intertwining of families, of relationships, to some extent culture, has been deep. And there's a sense of a Slavic brother, Russia, Ukraine, to some extent Belarus. Part of the conflict that we witness has such deep history, we can talk about that. But there is a sense, without demeaning Ukraine's independence and sovereignty, of a civil war inside Ukraine that had to do with linguistic rights. One of the first things that happened in 2014 was the abolition of Russian language use in the eastern part. So there's been a kind of civil war between the East and the West over the years that has become a proxy war in some measure. Because I don't think you can talk about the Ukraine crisis right now without calling it a Ukraine, Russia, US, NATO crisis. But Ukraine has a deep history, complicated history. I mean, so much of that terrain has been defined by a war, World War II, that, you know, killed 27 million people, Soviets, which we know so little about. But we do know the East-West confrontation over Ukraine is now the epicenter of not a new Cold War anymore, David. It's a hot war.
Just to back up even a little bit before World War II, which when Germany invaded the Soviet Union and took tremendous destruction in Ukraine, prior to that, in the early 30s, there was a great famine in Ukraine in which millions of Ukrainians died, and it's known by them as the Holodomor. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Murder by hunger, and according to the Guardian Weekly, was consistently referred to as a deliberate act by Stalin to destroy the Ukrainian nation.
There's a lot of discussion and debate in the scholarly community about whether it was targeted at Ukraine or whether it was simply part of Stalin's brutal campaign to attack the kulaks. And the killing of Russians, of Ukrainians, was sometimes seen as a, you know, it was, there was an equivalent, there were so many killed by Stalin. Now, Steve, my late husband, wrote a book called The Victim's Return. And we have been involved with a Gulag museum in Moscow, which marks the Ukrainian famine. But what it does is bring different points of view to bear. But the Stalin Gulag and the issue of how many Stalin killed is a broad question. The question of whether it was targeting, the collectivization, which was part of his policy, was brutal unto itself.
A little fast forward to February 1989, the last Soviet troops withdraw from Afghanistan. November 9th of that same year, 1989, the Berlin Wall falls. 2 years later, the USSR dissolves. The country's leader, Gorbachev, and his foreign minister, Shevardnadze, negotiated with the then H.W. Bush administration and its Secretary of State, James Baker. It is during these negotiations that an offer was made to Moscow because of its security concerns that NATO would not move, I'm quoting here, 1 inch to the east. Now, you have looked at the veracity of this comment. Is it documented?
It is documented. It is documented in the National Security Archives, a nonprofit group in Washington, D.C., which received the files and documents from those who were around Gorbachev, including Gorbachev's files, but a man named Chernyayev and others. Several books have been written with documentation, primary documents. What's so tragic, David, is if one believes in alternatives that could have brought more security, the opportunity at the end of the Cold War, at the end of the Soviet Union, to have a non-military alliance in Europe was a real possibility. The Soviet Union ended, its counterpart to NATO, the Warsaw Pact, was dissolved. And instead of a vision Gorbachev had of a kind of transatlantic European home, from stretching from Vladivostok to Lisbon, NATO. And NATO was at first a few countries, but then it moved quickly, particularly in 2008 when Ukraine and Georgia were put, you know, offered fast track. But this is one of the most tragic, perilous alternative steps that did not need to be taken. And for a brief moment, people were signed on to an alternative. I think James Baker needs much more scrutiny because he seems to have played a central role. You know, there's the famous interview with an esteemed diplomat, George Kennan, in 1997, who said this will be one of the grave mistakes. It will lead to new Cold War, to a relationship between Russia and the United States fraught with militarization. And it has come to pass. And one takes no joy in feeling that one saw the possibility of this. So decades later, you had NATO on Russia's borders. It wasn't not one inch eastward. I also think people forget how significant it was. You talked about Afghanistan. Steve and I were in the Soviet Union when the troops came home. That was a very contested decision inside the Russian Soviet government. So you have that, and then you have a sense of betrayal on the part of the Soviet government that you had the NATO expansion later. Gorbachev, who is 91, in Moscow, in a clinic, was one of the great visionary leaders. He is more respected at home today than he has been. The danger, the sadness is he's linked with Yeltsin, and that history hasn't gone that well.
So in your view, a great opportunity rapprochement.
More than rapprochement, a different approach to to the world. You have militarization, you have a militarism of foreign relations today across the globe. 40, 50 years ago, you remember Olof Palme, you remember Willy Brandt, but an idea that human security, which today seems very relevant, climate, pandemic, nuclear proliferation, global inequality, poverty. These are the challenges and crises of our time, which military might is not well suited to deal with. And so on offer was an alternative way of engaging and shaping a world. It now seems so far away. And we've seen the costs of NATO expansion quite brutally, because I do think, though there are other factors, that NATO has played a role in what we see in the brutality in Ukraine.
You mentioned George Kennan, the much revered and venerated State Department diplomat. In that same statement that he made in 1997, he said, expanding NATO, I'm quoting here, such a decision may be expected to inflame the nationalistic, anti-Western, and militaristic tendencies in Russian opinion, to have an adverse effect on the development of Russian democracy, and to restore the atmosphere of the Cold War to East-West relations, and to impel Russian foreign policy in directions decidedly not to our liking. And that indeed has come to pass. And it's not like Kennan was some, you know, radical thinker. You know,
he was Mr. X, who had written about the need to contain the Soviet Union. He was quite sober. He was considered a realist.
Then you have also Clinton's defense secretary weighing in on NATO expansion. Again, not a radical leftist by any means, Bill Perry, in 2016, he said, in the last few years, most of the blame can be pointed at the actions that Putin has taken. But, he said, in the early years, I have to say the United States deserves much of the blame. Our first action that really set us off in a bad direction was when NATO started to expand, bringing in Eastern European nations. He said, Russia was, quote, very uncomfortable about having NATO right up to their border, and they made a strong appeal for us not to go ahead with that.
There were many appeals repudiated. I have to say, when I think of Bill Perry, you're right, no radical. But there's an expression in Russia, you know, when you go on pension, you become a dissident. And I mean, you know, he's kind of in that mode. And not only is he quite prescient in terms of his understanding of the danger of NATO expansion, but he's also been very wise about nuclear issues, which again needs to be brought into this discussion. But he's really continued prior to an awareness, it seems to me, of nuclear peril in these last years to sound the alarm. There's also someone else, no radical, the head of the CIA, William Burns, who very clearly came back from Washington. I think he was then the ambassador in 2008 and warned Washington, the establishment, that NATO expansion was not simply a Putin obsession, but across the political spectrum in Russia, it was very dangerous to expand. So there were many warnings. There were many warnings about the possibility and the need to define a different policy. But you know, David, when policies get invested and vested in DC, it's not simply the president, nor is it his advisors, but it's, you know, Ray McGovern, I don't know if you know him, but Mickey Matt. It's not simply, and I don't believe it's simply the military industrial complex, but you also have the media, you have Congress, you have think tanks, you have a whole array invested in this policy. So it becomes very difficult to turn it around. It was easier at a different point, but you know, the warnings were there. I will say, however, and I don't want to jump ahead, but February 24, Steve no longer here, but I've worked with many people who've studied the Soviet Union and Russia for 50 years in shock that Russia went into Ukraine. And I think there was, even among those who've advocated for an alternative policy, there was not a sense of how far it had gone. Could I just say one thing? One of the reasons there was shock, and there's legitimate, more than legitimate shock. But David, we have not had a debate in this country in the last decade. It's been one hand clapping. I mean, I'm not saying people have to agree with me, but you do need to have a range of views, or certainly a debate. And that to some extent has been shut down. Your program, The Nation, there are different points of view, but the narrative, the dominant narrative, has been anti-Russian, Russophobia, and a misunderstanding that a country is not just one leader.
Now, talk about what is talked about in the media quite a bit, and that is Russia annexing Crimea in 2014, reversing a 1954 Khrushchev decision to transfer Crimea, which was part of Russia, to Ukraine. And of course, Putin has reversed that and has annexed Crimea. What's going on there and in the Donbass area, the Donetsk and Luhansk, this large region with these two, sub-regions within them, Luhansk and Donetsk?
So Donbass is the region, and Russia has had people in there fighting. The eastern part of Ukraine has traditionally been Russian speaking. It's been the heavy manufacturing, it's the factories, it's the miners. So when the protests started, Maidan, there was a new leader in Kyiv, they began to fight those in the Donbass, Ukrainians, and mounted an anti-terrorist operation in 2014, which wasn't conducive to any negotiated settlement of the two regions. You did have the Minsk Accord, which has been the primary settlement document. But this is still contested. There will have to be, if there is, and there needs to be a settlement at some point, a way of resolving independence, sovereignty for Ukraine, but also linguistic rights and other things for the Donbass. Crimea, as you said, was gifted by Khrushchev in 54. It was part of the protests again in 2014, when if you listen to the Russians, they were fearful NATO was going to go into Crimea. They seized Crimea, annexed it, and that is interestingly not on the table right now, even in the Minsk agreements. Crimea has sort of been shelved for future work because there are other annexation issues, as you know, in Yugoslavia, Western Sahara, others that some people like Anatole Levin, the scholar, believe should be part of a global kind of referendum, maybe monitored through the UN. That may be fantasy. But at the moment, some of the fighting going on, David, by the Russians in the East is designed to bring a bridge to Crimea and water. Because one of the issues in Crimea, as far as I follow it, is the water shortages, because Ukraine has had access and cut off water. Where that is resolved right now, it's not central, it seems, in the negotiations such as they are. And there have been, gets harder and harder, as you can imagine, as the brutality, the war crimes. But there are negotiations underway. And the longer the war goes on, the more dangerous the escalation, more lives lost. But it's a lot of weapons coming in.
Edward Said, the great Middle Eastern expert and scholar, talked about unresolved geographies. Just take
but, you know,
Caucasus.
David, there is the expression frozen conflicts. There are quite a few frozen conflicts, like Abkhazia, that region.
Well, you have, you know, current warfare between Azerbaijan and Armenia over Nagorno-Karabakh, one of the unresolved geographical ethnic issues. When a great empire collapses, there's all of this detritus around that is unsettled and unsettling.
The issue of empire is interesting. I will post it, but Steve did a very scholarly project about 10 years ago on how the Soviet Union ended, and he went through 10 theories. It ended with something he never liked, which was that the men make history, that Yeltsin had a will to power, Gorbachev had a will to reform, and they clashed on the scene. And Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia went into a forest in the Belovezh forest and signed a treaty ending the Soviet Union. But, you know, I was going to say I've covered Russia for 40 years. You can't cover a country by focusing on one person. Putin is Russia, but so is the Russian Orthodox Church. So are the regions. So are the regional governors. So is the right wing. So is there a tiny left wing. But the idea of covering a country as if Putin was the only, though I think if he's ousted, you will see a military security troika. You will not see Alexei Navalny in power. And that's a measure of the nationalism that arises in times of war and the militarization.
And of course, what happens in 2014, not just the annexation of Crimea, as you alluded to, the Maidan uprising and the ousting of Viktor Yanukovych, who was close to Moscow. It's been described as a coup. What exactly happened?
Viktor Yanukovych, by the way, Ukraine is deeply corrupt, deeply corrupt. So you get this offer to Ukraine, Yanukovych, of joining the kind of European Union. And in that offer is small kind of tiny language about also becoming part of a military union. The Russians put on offer the Eurasian Union. And at one moment, there was discussion of Yanukovych, Ukraine joining both so that it would be a bridge between East and West and not one or the other. So then you have the Maidan protests. Yanukovych is essentially ousted. There is an agreement, briefly, Germany, France, US, to have elections, emergency elections, a few months out. That is essentially moot when Yanukovych is pushed out, street action. He flees to Moscow. And then you have Maidan. And, you know, Maidan was a mix of pro-democracy protesters seeking an end primarily to corruption of the elite, but it was also, there were snipers, there were right-wing forces, there were nationalist forces, the Azov Battalion. These are neo-Nazi extremist forces, which should not be denied simply because Russia talks about them. They exist, but so did protesters seeking an end to corruption. But the United States got quite involved. The US ambassador in Ukraine was involved. Victoria Nuland, who is in this administration, the Biden administration, was then in the administration, was famously shown handing out cookies to the protesters. But more important than that, she was taped, maybe it was a surveillance call, essentially telling the UN ambassador, the US ambassador, excuse my language, F the EU, because we want this person, Yats. They wanted who they wanted, and it worked out that way. And then the first real prime minister or leader was a chocolate oligarch. So the corruption continued. Then you get Zelensky. He ran on a peace platform. And in the last weeks before the war broke out, and he has become, you know, the hero of our times, because of the circumstances in Ukraine, because it's so difficult, his ratings had dropped precipitously. He was not in a good place in the next election. That has changed. And he has risen, as many do, or some do, to the moment. And he has a very interesting background. His independence is probably limited by the right wing. I think he's also limited by the US. And it's interesting, one day he wants negotiations and the next day he seeks more weapons. And I think the US is in there, has been in there, billions of dollars of weapons. And if you send more sophisticated weapons as we are, you need more advisors.
Now, you mentioned how we should not focus on Russia simply through the prism of Putin. Nevertheless, he is a very easy target, you know, former KGB agent. It was very much like what the US and its media did with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. He was Iraq. Everything defined as Iraqi was stemming from Saddam Hussein. So that's a pretty steady trope in US policy.
I think our politics are so often seen through the prism of personalities that we apply that globally, at the risk of losing sight of some seminal issues, yeah. But there's no question that Putin seems isolated as he's made this horrific miscalculation. He seems at war with his security team. The repression of the media and other nonprofit groups is moving in a horrific, precipitous way because they existed. I mean, they've been slowly over these last few years, the issues of registration of foreign agents. But, you know, many of these newspapers have been repressed in the last few weeks. So that's a new wave, very dangerous, and reminds us, David, that Cold Wars are pretty lousy for those who seek independence, who seek a dissenting voice. I have been very close to one of the leading independent newspaper editors since he founded the paper called Novaya Gazeta, which is one of the muckraking independent newspapers, anti-corruption. It participated, remember, in the international consortium project about offshore money, Pandora's. So he won a Nobel Peace Prize at the end of last year, along with a Filipino journalist, which has not protected him. His paper had to be suspended a few weeks ago. We at The Nation are publishing some of the articles that this paper could not publish. We've had them translated, reporting from different cities in Ukraine. He was splashed with red paint the other day on a train. It's not clear, you know, he has security, but these are people trying to continue to work courageously in a climate which, you know, Ukrainian independent papers are probably having a hard time too. Independence is hard to maintain.
Well, part of the media landscape here in the US, of course, a parade of generals that go up to the microphone and cameras.
David, I cannot tell you, I'm not someone to throw tomatoes at TV sets. Okay. But I mean, it's not new, but if I had to see more of John Brennan or Clapper, he perjured himself. I mean, these are people who come on MSNBC and are treated like arbiters of truth and integrity. And you know what's scary? I'm going to sound like an old, but a younger...
I need answers to my tax questions. Where can I find them?
Need answers? Try our interactive tax assistant on irs.gov/ITA. Simply select your tax questions, provide your information, and it gives you answers. Also, check our help and resources page and try our online tax map. 5,000 tax topics from A to Z. Plus, you can access forms, publications in a variety of formats.
Pittsburgh, Hello, and welcome to Breakfast for Dinner. This is DJ Chris Wired. I want to thank you for joining me. You just heard Baroque Plastic by Stereolab. I think they have a tour coming up this year, which should be pretty fun. And we got other fun stuff here for you, but first, let's take care of a little business.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
A couple other shows I want to tell you about here on WRCT. Away with Words is an upbeat and lively hour-long public radio show and podcast about language, examined through history, culture, and family. Each week,